Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us for today's teletown hall on aging and how to plan for it. In the next 45 to 60 minutes, we're going to provide answers to your questions about how to prepare your family to care for you and assist you with handling your assets, and how to hold difficult discussions with family members on things like housing changes or choosing between in-home care versus long-term care communities. My name is Tasha Berner-Horvath, and it's an honor to serve as your State Assembly Member for Encinitas, Carlsbad, Oceanside, Vista, and Camp Pendleton. You know, when I took office, I never thought I would be leading during a worldwide pandemic. And since last year, I've really tried to address what's currently on everybody's mind. And these teletown halls have become so popular that we're continuing them as we come out of the pandemic. From topics with experts on COVID-19 to providing business tips and resources to keeping kids safe online, to wildfires and disaster preparedness, to important topics like today about how to hold difficult discussions with family members, especially with loved ones who are seniors or otherwise in need of additional support. We all know that being prepared and holding conversations with family members when there is no crisis is the best approach. But many families find it difficult to even start these conversations, and unfortunately, many of them find themselves in a bind with who should be selected to be part of the care team when they need it most. In some instances, leading decisions about long-term care may not even be a close family member, but somebody who is not emotionally involved. These teletown halls have helped us really give my constituents the direct and informative resources that they can trust. So today, I want to thank my guest speakers who will help us navigate some of the questions and concerns we're hearing about. But before we begin, I want to let everybody know how our teletown hall works. I know my constituents here in North County have submitted questions that we'll do our best to get answered today. To make sure our panel can be heard by everyone, participants are in listen mode. If you'd like to ask a question during this town hall, please email assemblymember.bernerhorvath@assembly.ca.gov. That's assemblymember.bernerhorvath@assembly.ca.gov, and we'll do our best to address them as we go forward. This town hall is being recorded, and we'll make the recording available on my website so that you may share it or listen again at your convenience, because there's a lot of information. Sometimes we don't catch all the websites and the numbers and the organizations that can help us out. So let's begin by having our speakers take 2 to 3 minutes to self-introduce. So I'd like to start with Lisa Rowe, who's the Executive Director from Senior Life Source. So Lisa, go ahead and briefly tell us about your agency and what your role how your role has shifted in the last several months, and talk about some of the most common questions and concerns your organization gets asked.
Sure. Thank you very much for having us today. My name is Lisa Rowe. I'm the Executive Director of Senior Life Source. We are a charity nonprofit organization that provides education on aging for all ages through interactive panels with local experts. So our mission really is to help people become confident advocates for themselves and their loved ones by preparing them with the knowledge and trusted resources needed to make these informed decisions about their desired care in later life. So really, we just want to encourage people to prepare for their future instead of, like you had mentioned, waiting for a crisis to happen and then scrambling to find services and trusted professionals to provide those services. So really the end goal for us is to enhance quality of life by connecting people to their community resources here in San Diego, and Carlsbad included. With the pandemic, we had switched over to Zoom, and we were providing educational panels that way for people in need and their specific questions that they had on all issues of aging. And then we go out and we just find the local experts to address their issues. So that's a little bit about Senior Life Source. Briefly about myself, I started in the aging field about 20 years ago as a social worker in the nursing home. And then I went on to receive my PhD in sociology, specializing in aging and health. I worked as research faculty for the Claude Pepper Center at Florida State University, addressing quality of life in long-term care. I'm not sure if any of you remember Claude Pepper. He served as the Florida House of Representatives back in 1928. He was also elected to the U.S. Senate in 1936. He was influential in the Older Americans Act and the passage of Medicare and Medicaid, so it was really an honor to get to work there. But now I decided to take my knowledge to the people, and here I am at Senior Life Source.
Thank you, Lisa. That's so inspirational. And we got a little bit of history. So that's great. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And thank you for joining us today. Now we'll go to Carol Lindsay, who is a founding member of Senior Life Source and also a member of my District Advisory Working Group on Aging and Long-Term Care. Carol, do you want to introduce yourself and a little bit what you do and you know, your personal background and journey into coming here today?
Yes, thank you so much. It is such an honor and a pleasure to be here. My background includes working in the field of helping seniors for over 25 years in one fashion or another, but the journey really became personal for me when my mother died suddenly and my father was now a widower. He did well for about a year or two, but he fell and broke his hip and no longer could live alone. My brothers and I discussed what should be the next step, and since I was the one without young children at the time, I left my corporate job. I brought Dad down to San Diego. He was living near San Bernardino. He moved in with me, and I cared for him at home for 3 years. So being a resource now answers a lot of the questions that I lived through and had then. And so I'm deeply, personally passionate about helping people get the information to make informed decisions. While it took me a few years to really navigate things through with my dad, who was an absolute gem and charm to live with, there were still a lot of challenges that we faced. And the whole idea with Senior Life Source is to actually give people an immediate roadmap and resources to address their immediate concerns. And they're vast, everything between housing, financing, and actually delivery of care for their loved ones. My organization, my corporate hat, if you will, is the owner and founder of Superior Home Care Services. We provide in-home care for seniors in their home with professional caregivers and care management. So I'm delighted to be able to help people in more than one way. And that's a bit of my background.
And I appreciate that. I think so many of us, worry about that future or have lived through that past. And, you coming today with that personal experience and, say 3 years of navigating, that's a lot of navigation. If you could give us, and my constituents some shortcuts, I think we'd all be very appreciative. So really, again, thank you so much for joining us. And so today I also want to welcome Ted Lang, who is the other founding member of Senior Life Source with his expertise in insurance and securities. So Ted, do you want to do a little intro?
Yes, and thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be on the call today and explain a little bit about how devoted we are to helping seniors. I'm originally from Omaha, Nebraska. I moved to California in 2006, the reason being that my wife at that time had a terminal illness. She had emphysema, and you know anything about that disease. The climate in Nebraska is either really hot or really cold. And so we decided her pulmonologist recommended we get out of Nebraska. My son at the time was an engineer here at Northrop Grumman. Her pulmonologist intern was Bob Sarnoff, who was head of pulmonology at Scripps. And, we're both pretty darn tired of snow. And we had my business there, my two partners bought me out, and in 2006 we arrived. And I went from being a CEO of a pretty large company to becoming a caregiver, and that's quite a transition. One of the things that I found and was kind of frustrating is, where do you go to find out information? I had the good fortune to meet Carol Lindsay, who just spoke, and Carol was really helpful in putting me in the right direction. As my wife's illness progressed, Carol was able to facilitate my having an in-house caregiver. You're trying to do it by yourself, it's really challenging. I really learned that because we would both get on each other's nerves. And she did pass, and with the experience that I had of being a caregiver for 5 years, it caused me to have a real concern about what you don't know. How do you find out information? So Carol and I together decided to form Senior Life, Life Source, to facilitate this to help people. My background, of course, is I'm a certified financial planner, have been actually longer than I'm willing to admit, well, in the mid-80s. And interesting enough, my focus was entirely on retirement planning for seniors. And so after this occurred and we put Senior Life Source together, my focus now in the business we have today is I have a branch with a mortgage company, and our focus is entirely on helping seniors navigate these waters. It's been a very interesting road. In addition to that, I'm also, many of you may be familiar with serving seniors here in San Diego. I'm on their board of directors. And again, my entire focus since I retired, well, actually, I got really bored after my wife passed and decided to take my time and effort and work with serving seniors and see if we can help make their lives better. So again, that's who I am and where I came from.
Well, Ted, I appreciate you keeping it real. You know, I think that is a, you know, lived experience that you bring to this. And I want to, you know, thank you all for introducing yourself. You all bring such a passion to this topic that is so hard for many of us. And I really appreciate you bringing your passion and experience. So I think, you know, for our listeners, I know you can hear that we have really local subject matter experts on today's panel who hold authority and influence in their positions and are true servants wanting to help people learn about how to provide care that's compatible with an individual family member who oftentimes is losing their independence and may not have prior conversations to preparing the family for an inevitable future crisis. I could imagine having these difficult discussions when not in crisis and being as prepared as possible. I'm kind of like the planner in the family. And it's really the best way to go about it, but sometimes that's not possible, and each of you, you know, kind of have brought a different perspective to this. So today our panel will help us prepare for the different decisions that I know we will face in the coming years about helping us and our loved ones be prepared as possible for any sort of family crisis that may occur in the future. So I'm actually really anxious to get started with our conversation today. So Lisa, let's begin with you. Can you go through what kind of living options are currently available? I know a couple of them, such as home and community-based services, retirement communities, independent or assisted living communities, life plan continuing care, retirement communities, and, you know, ADUs. Could you walk us through what are those different types of living options, when we should be considering them, what's the difference between them? Because I think, you know, when we look at this, it can be really overwhelming for many of us.
Absolutely, yes. You know, and it's nice that there are many more alternatives today than there were 20 or 30 years ago, right, when you basically we grow older at home or move into a nursing home. So I can go ahead and give you kind of a snapshot of the different late life living options. So starting off within the home and home and community-based services, those are for individuals that, you know, of course, want to stay in their home. And there are services that can be provided that can help you stay there for as long as possible. And they're there to help you, for people that are living with functional limitations, receive a variety of services in their home, one of them which would be Carol's company for the in-home care services. And if that's not an option, there's independent living. And those are for people who want to live among their peers, or maybe they don't really want to have the chores that go along with having a home. So many independent living communities offer a full array of homemaker and housekeeping services. And these are for people who are still fairly independent in everything in their life. And then we have life plan communities, which is also known as continuing care retirement communities. And these cater to individuals who don't really want to worry about having to move from one community to another as they grow older and their needs change. So these communities offer people 60 and over a long-term continuing care contract, and that provides for independent living units, and also residential care and assisted living services, and skilled nursing care all in one location for an individual's lifetime. Then we also have intentional communities, and these are for where residents participate in the planning and the design of the community, and they live cooperatively by mutually supporting one another through the changes that aging can present. We also have accessory dwelling units, ADUs, also known as elder cottage housing opportunities, and these are small manufactured homes with a universal design, and they're on the property of a single-family home, typically owned by a relative. And these are perfect for multi-generational families because it provides support and companionship while still maximizing everyone's privacy and independence, which we all like. So when independent living is no longer an option, an assisted living community can cater to those who need assistance with some activities of daily living. And that's things such as dressing and bathing. So assisted living communities, they provide 24-hour access to supportive care staff, and they also offer residents with a life plan and enrichment activities. And then, of course, there's a nursing home, and these are for people who have high level of care needs or around-the-clock care, and they're unable to live alone at home with a care partner. And the key really is to figure out what place will be best for you or your loved one, depending on the level of care needs, because there isn't a one-size-fits-all for these late-life living options.
Well, that's super helpful. So there's, you know, what we would discuss with our family members depends on how independent they are and what their needs are, what they would prefer, and then the question always comes up, Lisa, what are the costs associated with each of those different options?
Yes, absolutely. The cost is one of the most top questions, and there's actually this wonderful website that I love to go to, and it's called Genworth, and they provide a cost of care survey. And you can go to their website and you can type in Carlsbad, California, USA, and they will give you hourly, daily, monthly, and annual costs of what it is in the area now and in the future. So if looking at that, right now in-home care is on a monthly cost on average in San Diego, $5,700 a month. Assisted living community.
Ooh, that sounds steep.
That's pretty steep, yes. And I think, you know, Carol can dive into a little more on the details of what that entails and really, you know, why it is that cost, but it's really beneficial when it can work in the home. Assisted living communities per month in this area run about $4,500 a month, and a private room in a nursing home is about $14,000 a month. So annually, that's about, you know, a little over $173,000. So it's not cheap, which is why it's also important to speak with people like Ted and certified financial planners and really kind of help figure out what's the best option in addition to your level of care needs.
Well, I really appreciate that. Some of those numbers are really startling. So, Ted, I'm going to turn it over to you to help us feel reassured on how do we help those we love do the options that are best for them and their situation and that they can also afford.
Well, yes, and that's really the important thing, not only in affording, but what I found is the family unit sometimes, everybody has an opinion. And you need to have someone develop a relationship with someone who's an outsider who can have communications, but do it without the emotion. You know, there's no tie there, that makes sense. That could be even someone from your church, a financial advisor, an attorney, somebody that you have confidence in. And one of the first things that when you go through that process is work with someone who will listen and ask questions and to get to really understand what it is that this person wants to accomplish. It's not a product-driven issue. It's a matter of saying, okay, who are you? What are you most comfortable in? Give you one example. If a person can afford to live at home or stay at home, surrounded by all of their history, it's a proven fact that they will live longer and they'll live more comfortably. But as you heard from what Lisa said, in-home care is going to be very expensive. So we have to do an analysis of what are the assets that are available to them. And a lot of instances like that, to be able to stay at home, one of the areas I work in is with reverse mortgages. And it's not the reverse mortgage of 20 years ago. It's a reverse mortgage today, which is really a retirement planning tool. How can a person tap into some assets to do it on a before tax basis to meet the needs and make it affordable? And most of our families that we work with, the biggest single asset they have available to them is the equity of their property. And then the question is, can they get access to it without having to pay taxes on the money? Yeah, and of course, if staying in the home is not the option, then we have to look at getting all of their assets put together, get them in order, and get an understanding of what they want to accomplish, because there are a lot of good public programs out here that are available to them as well. And so it's really a matter of our getting to understand who they are, what they want to do, because it's their life that we have to be concerned about. And that's usually a process of my background as a financial planner. We spend more time listening than we do talking. And sometimes that's you need to do more of that, I think, and to really understand who you are and who you're dealing with.
I think that's a great way to approach it. I mean, I'm glad you brought up the reverse mortgages. You know, I've heard about those, and I heard about them 20 years ago. And so for me, when I heard you just say that, I said, oh, that's something scary. That's a scam. That they're gonna be, you know, might leave them worse off. So if I'm feeling that way, I'm thinking some of our constituents are also feeling that way. Can you go into what's the difference from the reverse mortgage 20 years ago and what it is today, and maybe how it's more beneficial for seniors today?
Yes, of course. The reverse mortgage of yes, you know, the reverse mortgages came out back in the Reagan era. They've been around a long time. One of the problems that you know, I used to run a very large company that we had 700 financial advisors. And 20-some years ago or longer, if they got involved in reverse mortgages, I was concerned not about what the product was, but how it was sold. Now we have regulations. The government has stepped in. Thank gosh they did. And the people that market those products have to have extensive training. They have to be licensed. And a good example, one of the things that we do now, if let's say your mom is interested in doing a reverse mortgage, she has to go through a counseling session with an independent counseling group where they ask her questions to make sure that that advisor told her everything, and are they cognizant? Do they really understand what this is about? And that's priceless. You need to do that to make that no one's taking advantage. I get really up in the air personally when I see people who they have a bunch of initials behind their name, as an example, and they spend a weekend studying to get that. I'm very proud of the fact that I am a CFP. It's like a postgraduate course. And so, again, the real key, but the reverse mortgage itself, probably the biggest thing that's important about it is it's before tax dollars. You know, if you take money out of your 401k or your IRA, that's subject to taxes. If you take money out of a separate investment, that's subject to capital gains tax. So if you can have access to capital to help make your retirement more comfortable, but do it on a before-tax basis. And so consequently, most of the people that I meet are referred to me by other financial planners and accountants. Because it's really, you know, people can tell a story, but numbers don't tell stories. Numbers are actual, and I'm probably more of a numbers man than I am a salesperson.
Well, I appreciate that. I like number people, Ted, so that's maybe why I like you. And I appreciate you walking us through that, because I know that makes me feel reassured that there is this counseling, that we have the appropriate regulations on reverse mortgages. And I think you referenced Carol before, so maybe, Carol, maybe you can take us through the differences of in-home care. There's medical and non-medical in-home care companies, and what does that mean for cost and comfort, and how does that relate to somebody's ability to care for themselves and their own as they age?
Yeah, thank you so much. As Ted mentioned, that's important in reverse mortgage decisions, there is an independent person who works with an individual to make sure they understand the product that they're looking at and that they're mentally competent to make these type of decisions. And there's two sides to that. You want to make sure that the advocate of a family, because I consider all my clients families, in addition to the person that we're caring for, we're also being a resource for all the stakeholders. That means, you know, husbands and daughters and sons. And we sit down with our families and find out who the person is that has the advance directive for health care, because that's somebody that we need to discuss, as you said, medical and non-medical options for care. We need to make sure that there's somebody as a designated financial agent in the event that our client can no longer handle their finances, and to make sure that bills continue to get paid appropriately based on the plan that they put in place. So to answer your question a little bit more specifically, there are services that come into the home that are covered by medical insurance, and then there's services that come into the home that are private pay. So I'll start with the ones that are covered by medical insurance, and keep in mind, my goal with my families is typically to marshal all those resources together. So it's not just a picture of one type of service over another. It's how can we get the most bang for our buck in achieving the goals, as Ted mentioned, the plan that that individual really sees for themselves. We can provide assistance for somebody in their home, wherever their home is. So if they're living at an assisted living facility and they'd like to have more independence with a private care provider, giving them transportation or taking them places and outings to meet their friends independent of the services of that facility, that's something that we can do to cater, again, to what they really want now that we know what's important. So it all starts with that plan. Going forward, from the medical side of it, there are services called home health services. Sounds a lot like in-home care, I know, but they are different. Home health is actually an extension of a hospital or a skilled nursing facility, and it is prescribed, just like a doctor writes it on his prescription pad to go fill a medicine prescription. This is a prescription for services that will come into the home. And depending on a person's condition, if they have, for example, a broken hip and they've been recovering at a skilled nursing facility, upon discharge, the discharge planner will recommend a local home health company. And those visits are covered by their insurance to whatever degree the insurance covers those. Usually there's no copay, and it involves usually a couple of weeks to several months of continued care from an RN who will come in typically once or twice a week to visit, a physical therapist to make sure that exercises are being done on a regular basis and that Our clients are continuing to improve at home. Occupational therapists to make sure that the things they do on a regular basis, like getting in and out of the car and being able to reach down and pick up the laundry soap to do the wash, make sure that those activities can be done safely and, you know, navigating safely in their own shower. Those activities are focused on to increase independence. And all of these services work in concert with each other. However, these are professionals that come in for a visit and then leave. So a lot of times folks may get confused and they think, hey, I've got home health coming in. Why do I need a caregiver? Well, there are different types of services. A caregiver is somebody that you schedule to stay however many hours you agree upon. And these services come in, provide their treatment for an hour, and then leave. Now, it's not to say that we can't work in concert together. So on a day that the nurse is coming in and the client is fairly independent, they've got somebody at least checking in on them, they may choose to have a caregiver come in on the following day when there's no visit scheduled. So there's ways to leverage that. Another service that is covered under insurance is hospice care. This is typically both palliative, meaning to help manage pain, as well as end-of-life care. And those services, like the home health care, come in and depart after their visit, but they don't stay around the clock. So while they provide, hospice can provide the nurse and the physician to manage pain, they also will provide a home health aide to come in once or twice a week to help with a sponge bath or bathing. But other than that, they also provide a social worker to discuss end-of-life plans with the family. But other than that, they don't provide somebody round the clock unless it's a crisis situation. And once the crisis is passed, then it goes back to just the intermittent visits. So the key is understanding that, hey, we can leverage some of these visits so that we have somebody professionally coming in that's covered under my medical insurance on certain days, and then maybe we have the private pay caregiver on other days. So that's some of the difference.
So it's a little bit like Tetrising it all together, right?
Exactly.
And that seems complicated, and that's why there are people like you who know how to do this and assist people like, you know, me. You know, real quick, and I want to move on to, some of the questions about the difficult conversations, because, like, this is all great, you know, to be proactive and to educate ourselves about the different options, but if we don't have those difficult conversations, it just gets harder when we're in a crisis. But I did want to ask, Carol, if there are any tax credits or deductions if we decide to become caregivers for our aging parents.
That's a great question. I hate to put it out there and say it depends, but it does depend. A lot of the, for example, some folks may have heard about long-term care insurance policies. These are fantastic. Typically, the policy is purchased when folks are younger, before they have medical problems, and they continue to pay premiums until they decide to go on claim. Many times, once that claim is opened, meaning that the long-term care insurance company says, yes, you're entitled to now receive the payout according to your needs, they may designate a family member to actually receive payment for that. So that's one way that a family member may get paid. That is probably the most direct way that a family member can get paid. There are certainly deductions for all of these services. So meaning if your doctor says you need in-home care, then you can certainly save your receipts and use that against your taxes as a medical deduction because the doctor has determined that it's medically necessary. So for folks that are able to take deductions, that can be very meaningful, just like giving your accountant the receipt for a wheelchair, you would give your accountant your bills for the in-home care that you receive. So those are ways that there may be some tax advantage. Some of the veterans programs, some provide benefits to family members. Most of them provide direct benefits to the patients themselves. With the aid and attendant benefit, there may be payments available if somebody has been discharged, honorably discharged, and meets certain criteria, both financial and service-wise. They may be able to get some assets paid out to them to help cover medical costs once that starts to be part of the picture.
Got it. So it does depend. And so real quick, because it depends on so many things, are we talking to our certified financial planner about that? Are we talking to our doctor or insurance about that? How do we decide which are we talking to our accountant? Who are we talking to figure out what is the best thing? Because, of course, what if there's any tax credit and deductions, that opens up new options for care.
Right. I'm so glad you asked. There's two resources that I would start with. One would be the social worker or discharge planner at a hospital. Part of their role is being aware of community programs and different services that are offered by the VA or offered within the community. So that's one resource. And the other would certainly be a CPA, because they're going to understand what the financial picture is of their clients. They're going to know what brackets they fall into, and they should be current on the latest deductions that are available to their client within that tax bracket. So they'll be able to advise their clients on what programs they should have access to. You can also look for a certified care manager. Different companies offer these services, and part of the criteria that is offered by care managers is being able to help families sit down and understand which programs they can avail themselves of.
Perfect, perfect. Thank you for giving us those resources. I know we're going to all be Googling them after this town hall. I want to skip to the question, and I don't know if it's, Carol, if I maybe direct it first to you and then to Lisa, but what is the best way to bring up difficult conversations with family members, such as when to move to a long-term care community, when do we go through the financial documents? What's the best way to do that? Because that's hard for families often.
This is Carol. I'll be happy to take the first part of that, and then Lisa, you can follow me on that. How's that sound? The ideal time is when the family has put a trust together. And hopefully this is during the young and healthy years when people are feeling good and unemotional and it's not a crisis, and they're thinking about what they'd like to leave as a legacy plan for their family. And they're also thinking about what's important to them personally about end-of-life decisions. Do I want CPR? Do I not want to be resuscitated? To what length am I willing to have medical interventions? And to what point would I like to be left alone? At that point in time, it is really important to tell your family, I've made a trust, I've given you instructions, and I'd like you to know what those instructions are. Because although it may be difficult to talk about these things, what is way more difficult is not being able to get those questions answered when somebody's had a stroke and is unable to speak, or now has dementia, and there's things that the family is unclear about. I've seen these questions rip families apart unnecessarily. So having those discussions, literally as soon as you put together a trust, is the time to do it. And also the family understanding who's in charge of the medical decisions if mom or dad can't make those for themselves, and who's in charge of the financial decisions so that the family knows who to go to and which lane everybody has been designated to stay in. That really helps families not try and argue or push the point after the fact. And what we're trying to do is preserve the family and those good relationships as the years go on. Lisa, what do you think?
Lisa, why don't you chime in here?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you covered a lot of very important points. As far as having discussions maybe about possibly moving into a long-term care community, or if you feel that maybe your mother or father might not be safe in the home, you know, you really just have to always remember to include the family member in the discussion, and first, importantly, just listen and to what they want, ideally, maybe have a list of things. And then once you really understand what that person wants and needs, you know, you can look into the different options that can include their wishes as best as possible, bring it to the table to discuss it with your loved ones. You know, as I mentioned now, there's different varieties of places that you can choose. And if it gets too emotional, you can always consider bringing in an outside third party or like a mediator to kind of assist with the discussion. But really, it's just making sure you include everyone. And the most difficult thing for people to hear is really, you know, it's up to the individual to make their own choice. You know, just as your parents had to let you go off into the world and make your own decisions at age 18, whether they were wise or unwise, you know, it was your life choice. So if your mom or dad says, listen, I really want to try and stay in the home as long as possible, and if maybe they're at risk for a fall, well, let's look into the different options there first and really just try and do all that you can to help them with their wishes. And that's really all I can say on that.
I appreciate that. I think that's really important. So I'm going to recap it because I want us all to hear it, which is first, listen, ask, and then don't say anything and listen. And then two, figure out what's possible, who stays in what lane, who gets designated as what. Carol, I really appreciate the point you brought up about knowing about somebody's wishes before there's a crisis. You know, it is, you know, this. I've heard so many friends have stories about, you know, a parent having a stroke and then not knowing and the distress that it causes. So knowing those wishes, setting up a trust, and, you know, I think we could probably do an entire next Teletown Hall on legal documents and trusts. I think that probably is a whole Teletown Hall we could do separately on this. But I did want to close up one last question for Ted. We got an email from one of our constituents, and she asked, I want to make sure that my passing is not a burden on my children. What do I need to do? Is there an easy way to answer that?
Yes, there really is. I mean, it's a very important thing. And Carol touched about it a little bit. But, you know, to sit down, and one of the things that's so important is to put it into writing. And you really need to look at doing a trust. There's several things. As a good example, without a trust, and perhaps not even a will, you're going to be subject to the whim of the probate court and you'll be to determine who gets what. And that puts the family in turmoil after you're gone. To sit down and do a trust, sit down with an attorney, with your financial advisor. In fact, it should be all of those people working together for your benefit. The classic idea is from the simplest thing, if you have a bank account, put together a POD, payable on death, so there's no turmoil. When something happens, can your heirs get into the bank account and help settle those financial issues? Even having a car in joint name. The property, that's the biggest single asset that a person has, is typically the property. And that should make sure you put that into a trust. Again, to avoid probate court and to make it very simple. Life will continue on. I know a very wonderful example is my I have remarried. My wife that I'm married to now just lost her father, and I sat down with him about 4 years ago and helped put everything together for him. And again, what's really important is, what does they want to do? Where do they want things? Even something as simple as putting together a list, you know, it's pretty difficult to say, I want my watch to go with this person. In other words, eliminate. In one case we worked on not too long ago where they literally had a personal family auction, if you can imagine this, because if the kids don't decide, aren't happy with who gets what, they would bid on it and the money would go into a pot, and then after it was all done, it was distributed to everybody equally. So it's really sit down with a good advisor, and also conjunction with an attorney and your accountant if you have one, and let them and tell them what your wishes are and put it on paper, and so that when you go, it's you're really still with everyone. There's no crime. There's no. It's the mourning shouldn't be about confusion.
I appreciate that. So we're coming to an end, and what I'd like to do is pass it off to Carol to make any closing remarks. I think you wanted to talk about professional fiduciary responsibility, so you can make those in your closing remarks. And then, so Carol, and then Ted, and then Lisa. And I just wanted to thank you again for being here today.
Thank you so much. Again, it really is an honor to share what we have to give. Just briefly, sometimes families will find themselves at an impasse, and there are professionals, specifically professional fiduciaries, professional private fiduciaries, that can be hired by a family to take the role of either the power of attorney for healthcare and or the power of attorney for finances. And in some cases, when people are putting their trust together, it may be a really good thing to not put that burden directly on your family, or you may have reasons that you're not sure your son or daughter share exactly the same beliefs and opinions that you do about your decisions. So sometimes you can take that out of the equation by designating a private professional fiduciary to step into those roles. And so I just put that out there, that if your family isn't the most appropriate person, you can find trusted professionals to do that role. Again, part of the reason SLS exists is to offer education to folks, and we're always happy to answer any specific questions anyone may have. And again, Tasha, thank you so much for inviting us today. We really appreciate it.
So as we come close to the end of the Teletown Hall, I would also like to invite Ted and also Carol, if you'd like to make your closing remarks.
Well, this is Ted Lang. And again, first of all, Tasha, thank you for inviting us. It's wonderful to have a platform to be able to speak to all of North San Diego County here. And give people the proper advice. Everybody's, I don't want to say this, what you're doing I think is so important. And just giving information to people and actual so they can take the steps that are necessary.
Thanks, Ted. So just in closing, I just want to say, you know, Senior Life Source, it's education on aging for all ages, right? It's never too soon to have these important discussions, conversations. Think of it kind of like preventative versus curative measures, right? And to do this, we need to normalize having conversations of aging. And just, you know, if you'd like more information of Senior Life Source, you can visit our website at www.seniorlifesource.org. And thank you all very much for attending today, and thanks for having us.
This is Carolyn. And in closing, just keep in mind keeping those conversations open. And it is okay to change our minds later on, but knowing what people want early and upfront is a huge gift that you can share with your family. Thanks again.
We want to thank all of our panelists that are here with us today. As always, the Assembly District is here to assist and welcome your questions, comments, and concerns. The Assembly members' goal is always to provide the highest quality of public service on related state matters. If you have any questions that you can think of later and that were not asked today, please email the staff at District Director Janet.Chin, that's J-A-N-E-T dot C-H-I-N, at asm.ca.gov. Or you can also call the office at 760-434-7605. You can always visit the website at www.a76.asmdc.org and look for the podcast tab under Newsroom for an archive of this recorded town hall along with many other recorded topics of interest. Thank you again to our audience and enjoy your evening. Stay safe, North County.